Welcome to the Movement Church Podcast. Our vision is to be a movement of people finding their way back to God. For more information about Movement Church, including attending a worship experience, getting connected, or to give online, please visit movementcolumbus.com.
I should have watched that Mother's Day video before the service. I was sitting in the front row, like, crying, thinking, like, oh my gosh, I have to pull it together and go up there and be calm. I think partly it's because, well, I think I have a great mom, but my sister-in-law is ready to have a baby any day. We actually put a pool together yesterday to bet on who's going to figure out what day she's going to have this baby. It's the first grandchild. It will be my first niece, and so everyone is, like, way too excited about this. My dad built a cradle with his own hands and, like, made a pedal for it, and he made it on a lathe, like turned it on a lathe. He was supposed to be doing his taxes. This is what he was doing instead. This like incredible cradle. My grandma said, you know, now you're gonna have to make those for all of your children because you made one for the first baby. So that's what, and my mom, as soon as she found out that my sister-in-law was pregnant, she bought like everything that she had on her registry, so there was nothing left to buy. You think I'm joking, you don't know my mom. So she bought a lot of stuff. My sister-in-law decided that she wanted to decorate the nursery with elephants. My mom bought an elephant that sits this tall that they're keeping in the cradle right now. So there's just a lot of excitement about moms in our family. So anyways, that video made me tear up a little bit. But like Mark said, we're going to start this series on learning to walk, and to kind of set the whole stage this week. Over the course of the next 3 weeks, we're going to look at specific stories, like Mark said, people who interacted with Jesus during his time here on earth, and the way that they fell short and the way that Jesus walked with them and taught them what it meant for them to follow him even in their brokenness. But this morning I wanted to kind of set the stage for the whole thing. And so as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, some of you are hearing this and you're saying, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't I want to listen to Jesus? Why wouldn't I want to follow him? Why wouldn't I want to listen to what it is that John has to say in his gospel? But for some of you, maybe you go like, why would I want to follow this person? Why would I want to trust what it is that John has to say? Why would I want to trust the way that Jesus is going to lead me? Because I've tried to trust people before and they've led me astray. So I don't know if you've ever had an experience like that where someone is trying to teach you about something and they have zero qualifications to do that. Yesterday, my youngest sister graduated from college yesterday, so we were out in Indiana watching her walk across the stage and not trip and fall, so it was wonderful. So I was thinking about when I was in school and some of the classes that I took, and I had some really great professors, and I also had some other professors. So I took this one course. I have a degree in math and also a degree in counseling, and yes, I know that they don't go together. So while I was taking this one course for my counseling degree, it was called Research Methods. So the point was to teach all of these counseling and psychology majors, how do you like understand these sociological studies that are being done? How do you understand the information that's there? How do you put your own study together? How do you run the statistical things that you need to do to get the information that you want? My professor is explaining all of this to us. Now, she's a counseling professor. She was a very nice lady. She knew nothing about math, okay? So she's explaining these different statistical procedures, and she's teaching my class all of the wrong information. Like, she's saying, this is how this statistical procedure works. And I'm in the back going like, no, it's not. Like, I just took a test on that statistical procedure last week in my statistics class, and you're wrong. Like, I'm just sitting there thinking like, this is like the worst class I've ever taken. If you know me, you know that this is true. I have a really hard time hiding anything that I feel. So she knew pretty much immediately, some of you are laughing too loudly at that. She knew pretty much immediately that I thought she was an idiot, because I was sitting there thinking, you have no business teaching this to me. You have no business explaining this to me because you don't understand it. So you understand the counseling part of it, but you don't understand the math part of what's going on. This happened again recently. I got an A in that class, by the way. But this happened again recently. Like Mark said, I teach at Worthington Christian High School, and I teach Bible, and I have the chance to be involved with some of the other extra kind of curricular things that we do. And we take our seniors to the Dominican Republic every year on their senior trip. So we try to put as much responsibility in the seniors' hands as possible. We do ministry with kids down there. And so our students were putting together like some of the songs that they wanted to sing with the kids while we were visiting different villages and visiting different schools. And so another teacher and I are standing talking to some of our students before we go down there, and we're asking them, like, what are some of the songs that you think you want to do? And this girl says, well, we think we found this one song in Spanish we think we can do, and then we also want to do this song called Lord, I Lift Your Name on High, and we think that the song will work because the song has motions in the chorus. It goes like, you came from heaven to earth, and she starts showing me these motions. Now, if you grew up in church at all, you know that song and every motion that goes along with it, right? To show the way from the earth to the cross and then to the grave and then to the sky. Lord, I lift your name on high, right? Like, we all know those motions. And so these like 17-year-olds are explaining this to me and my friend, and we stopped them and said, we've been singing this song since before you guys were born. So, like, I appreciate you trying to educate me on the ways of Lord, I lift your name on high and the motions that go along with it. But I know this one. So maybe you have found yourself in a situation like that where someone's trying to explain something to you and you're probably nicer than I am and you're not expressing your disdain, but you're thinking like, you have zero business teaching me what you're trying to teach me. Or maybe it's happened the other way for you. Maybe you have found someone explaining something to you and you didn't realize how qualified they actually were to be teaching you this lesson. So my grandfather, he grew up with Hop Cassidy, who was a Heisman winner for Ohio State, which when I was growing up meant like nothing to me, but apparently that's a big deal. And so Hop then went on to work with the Yankees. He scouted for the Yankees. So I grew up in Pennsylvania, and we just came to Columbus every once in a while to like visit my grandparents. And there was one time I was talking to my grandfather's wife, and she said to me, Sarah, every time I would see her, she would ask me who my boyfriend was. And most of the time the answer was no one. And so she would say, like, oh, I just met someone and I think that you would really like this person. And so one day I was over and she said, I had this guy over the other day, Sarah, he's a friend of Hop's and I really think that you guys could get along. He was just so kind and we were talking a lot about baseball, and I'm like, Mary, who is this person? And she's like, his name is Derek, I don't know. I'm like, Mary, like Derek Jeter? And she's like, that's his name? I'm like, so Derek Jeter was at your house talking to you about baseball, right? Like, she just, it's like, just didn't even like matter to her, right? That like, okay, well, that's like kind of a big deal, Mary. And like, yes, please call me the next time he comes over. So, maybe you found yourselves in one of those situations, right? Before we listen to someone, we want to know why. Why should I trust you? Prove to me that you're worth listening to. So before we jump into this whole series, I want to first answer the question, why should we listen to John the gospel writer? And then also, why should we care about learning to follow Jesus? Why should we want to walk the way that he wants us to walk? So we're going to start with John. Let me give you a little bit of background information, then we're actually going to get into the gospel of John. There are lots of Johns in the Bible, just like you probably know a lot of Johns in your life today, which causes some confusion for us. So there's also this guy named John the Baptist. That's not who we're talking about, okay? So we'll cross paths with him a couple of times, but as we talk about John over the course of the next month, we're talking about John the gospel writer. John the gospel writer was one of Jesus' disciples. So he followed Jesus during the time that Jesus lived on earth. Jesus did ministry, we think, for about 3 years. He lived for about 30 years kind of in obscurity. We don't know a lot about his life kind of growing up. We know that he probably did what his dad did. He was a carpenter, and then he decided to enter into ministry. And so it's at that time that he begins to gather people to follow him. There are 12 guys who spend a majority of their time with him, and John is one of those guys. Out of those 12 guys, three of them get kind of extra time with Jesus. They get to see some miracles that no one else gets to see. They get to be part of conversations that no one else is part of. John is one of those three guys. So John provides us this really cool perspective on Jesus' life that we don't really see from the other gospel writers. The other thing that I think is really interesting about John is he's the only one of those 12 guys who wasn't martyred. He wasn't killed for his faith. Now, tradition tells us that they tried to kill him. There's some kind of, these stories aren't recorded in the Bible for us, but other historical accounts say that things happened to John, possibly like he was boiled alive and didn't die. So John's like Superman, I guess, I don't know. So they tortured him. They tried to martyr him, to kill him for his faith, but he lived. They finally exiled him to an island. And if you've spent a little bit of time studying the Bible, you may know that it's while he was in exile that he wrote the book of Revelation, which is the last book in the New Testament. So John lived into his 90s. He was kind of like the grandfather or the great-grandfather of the early church. John also wrote 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, which are little books tucked right at the end of the New Testament. They're letters to people. And when he writes to people, he's often using words like, my beloved. He seems to just have this heart that's overflowing for people. In the Gospel of John, he never names himself as John. He always calls himself the disciple that Jesus loved. Now, this makes some people feel uncomfortable. Like, if you had a sibling who always referred to themselves as, like, the child that my mother loves, you'd be like, that's kind of crappy. Like, I think she loves all of us, right? Or maybe not. I don't know. Some scholars have discussed this and kind of looked at the way that John talks about that and what is he trying to say. I don't think that John in any way was trying to say Jesus loved me more than he loved everybody else. But John seemed to have this understanding that what mattered most about him was the way that Jesus felt about him. He didn't need to define himself as John, one of the inner three, the one who got to see the most. He simply said, my name's John and Jesus loved me. That's all you really need to know about me. So John spends a lot of time with Jesus, gets to see these things that lots of other people didn't get to see. And he's the last one to write his gospel. So some people have said, why do we have four, we call them gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, four different accounts of the same story? They all tell Jesus' life. Why four different perspectives? You can come to Worthington Christian and take my class, and I'll explain it to you in greater detail. But John's gospel was the last one to be written. And what is so unique then about John's gospel is basically, most scholars believe that John knew about the other three versions of the gospel. He knew that Mark had written and that Matthew and Luke had written. And so he set out to include stories that no one else had talked about. So it's one of the reasons that I think John's gospel is so compelling and so interesting. It's like he's the friend who hears you tell the story and then goes, oh, and by the way, you forgot like 25 things about that awesome story that you just told. That's what John's doing for us. He's giving us kind of filling in the gaps and filling in the cracks. So he's going to give us this picture of Jesus that is unique and that I think is really beautiful. Now, why should we trust Jesus? Why should we want to follow him? There are lots of answers to that question, but I think John summarizes a few of them for us in the first chapter of his gospel. So you can turn to John chapter 1. If you don't have a Bible with you, there are Bibles under your chairs. John chapter 1 is page 809. And if you don't have a Bible, this Bible is yours to keep. No one will try to take it back from you as you're walking out the door. It's yours. You're welcome to it. We have lots of them. The big idea today is that I can walk with Jesus because he's inviting me on the journey. Maybe you've gotten to the point where you've realized like, oh, this person over here has something that I want to learn from them. I want to know more about them. Maybe that's like in a sport or in some sort of field, or it's at your job. You say like, that person knows what they're doing and I want to learn from them. But you're not really welcome to follow them. They're not interested in teaching you. They're not interested in bringing you along with what they're trying to do. That's not the case with Jesus. I can walk with Jesus because he's inviting me along. And I want us to see that in John chapter 1. So we're going to start right in John 1, starting with verse 1. John tells us this. In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. We'll stop right there for now. Why is Jesus worthy to be followed? Why can we trust him? Why should we want to learn to walk after him? The first thing that John tells us about him is that Jesus is life. Now, that's like maybe a simple way to say it. Jesus is life. He's all that matters, right? But as this is an idea that John is going to keep bringing us back to, it's one of the themes that he really tries to hammer home, that Jesus is life and that he offers life in a way that nobody else can. And as he keeps using this word life, we kind of lose sight of how great this word is because we can only see it in English. But if you go back to the original word that he used, he's not just talking about life like you breathe, like I'm alive and my grandfather is not. Not that kind of life. The word that he uses refers to an entirely different type of life. He's talking about, like in John 10:10, he's going to come back to this idea, and he's going to record Jesus' words. In John 10:10, Jesus said, I came that they may have life and have it to the full. I came that they might have abundant life, is how another translation says it. This is what John is talking about here. Jesus is life, and not just like, I get up and go to my job and then I come home and I go to bed and I do it all over again because I'm alive and I have to. Like the kind of life that you feel at the end of the best day that you've ever had in the world, right? You get to the end of the day and you think like, I feel so alive because of what I did today, because of who I spent time with, because we cliff jumped and it was terrifying and we almost died, but it was awesome, right? Like that kind of like, I just feel like I'm experiencing something and that this is what it means to be alive. This is what John is talking about. Jesus offers that kind of life. The kind of take your breath away, finally I know what it means to exist. Jesus is that kind of life. Now, I don't know if that like is appealing to you, but I can tell you when I study passages that have that kind of language in it, it like takes my breath away a little bit. Like I want that. And actually in the margins of some of my Bibles, I've actually written those notes down. How do I get more of this? This is what I want. I want at the end of each day to feel like, yes, I am alive. I'm not just existing. I'm alive. This is what Jesus came to offer us. Now, in case that's not enough for you, in case you're like, well, yeah, I'm okay, just existing, it's fine, I don't need to be alive, let's keep going. We'll pick it up in verse 5. Verse 5. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. God sent a man, John the Baptist, to tell about the light, so that everyone might believe because of his testimony. John himself was not the light. He was simply a witness to tell about the light. The one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He came into the very world he created, but the world didn't recognize him. He came to his own people, but even they rejected him. Okay, so first of all, Jesus is life. But secondly, he is light. We take light for granted most of the time. Particularly because of the day and age that we live, you can flip on a light switch and your room is filled with light, your whole house is filled with light. You don't have to walk around like terrified that someone is going to jump out and grab you because you can just turn the light switches on and see there is no one in your house. You just have a very active imagination. Like we take light for granted because it's so easy to get it. I personally am terrified of the dark. Okay, so I'm thankful that we live in this kind of world because I hate being in the dark. I'm not embarrassed to tell you that. If you jump out and you scare me, I will probably fall on the ground if it's dark. Like that, I am terrified of the dark, okay? So there's a closet that I have at school that we keep all of our supplies in for this trip that we take to the Dominican. And it's the person who was in charge of the trip before me didn't really care about keeping it organized. And it is like, it was the bane of my existence. So a few weeks ago, maybe like a month ago, I decided it was time for me to clean this thing out. It's disgusting. Couldn't even walk on the floor. But the thing about this closet is that there are no lights in there. I don't know who designs a closet like this, but there's like not even a light switch. It's just like, I don't know, we just put this room here, I guess, whatever, take a candle in, like what? So, which I don't think I'm allowed to have at school. So this closet, you can like prop the door open, but it's like really deep. It goes back kind of like around a corner and under a staircase. I mean, this is the stuff that horror movies are made of people. Okay, so I'm like back in deep in the bowels of this closet, pulling stuff out and putting stuff away, whatever. It is so dark in there that I can't even see like where the walls are and where the ceiling is. And so as I was in there moving things around, I stood up and hit my head so hard that I gave myself a concussion. Okay, so it's like very, very dark in this closet. I thought I was going to throw up. It was awesome. I came kind of out of the closet. Some students were there. They're like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I don't think I'm okay. I think I need to sit down." So the dark is like not our friend, okay? The dark doesn't lend itself to being able to get around. Even in a room that you know, when it's dark, everything seems strange. You can be tricked into thinking that there's something there when it's not actually there. We don't see things clearly in the dark. And this imagery is also used lots of times, not just in John's gospel, but throughout the Bible. It talks about different gospel writers, different scripture writers talk about how the world is dark. Without God, the world is dark. And people who don't know God, they kind of like the dark, because honestly, it's in the darkness that you can get away with some pretty shady things, because people can't see you. But all of a sudden, when the lights come on, everything is brought into focus. Everything is brought into clarity. And so John is telling us that that's what Jesus is. Jesus is the light of the world. Jesus comes into the world, and when he comes into the world, it changes the way that everybody sees things. It changes the way that everybody sees things because now I can see clearly. I'm not hitting my head on that stupid ceiling and giving myself a concussion and wanting to throw up for a week. Like, now I can see. I can see where things are. I can see myself more clearly. If you've ever gotten ready in the dark, you know how awful that can be, right? You get to work and you're like, "I thought these shoes were the same color, but they're not," you know? Like, getting dressed in the light is better for you and for everybody else. The light is important. Jesus not only is life, he's not just here to give you a reason to be alive. He's also here to let you live that life in clarity, to let you actually see what's happening. So there's a couple more things that I want us to see. Let's move on then to verse 14. We'll skip over a couple of these. Let's move on to verse 14. So the Word, that's how John is referring to Jesus. The Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. We have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. This is one that if you've spent a lot of time in church, you may take for granted. But Jesus became a person. He became flesh, is how some translations say it. Jesus decided to put on skin so that he could relate to you and so that he could relate to me. You will not find any story like this in any other world religion or worldview that you pursue. In no other faith do we find that God removes himself from his situation to draw close to us. Every other faith says, "Yeah, fine, come to me. Find a way to get close to me. Do enough good things, make enough sacrifices, do the right pilgrimages, come to me." And our God says, "No, let me come to you. I will step down." Philippians 2 talks about this and says that Jesus was so humble that he stepped out of heaven and put on a body. Okay, Jesus is like eternal and omnipresent, which means he can be everywhere all at the same time, and he's omnipotent, which means he's very powerful. Like, Jesus says, I'm going to be willing to like not access some of those things so that I can put on a body, so that I can walk among these people that I care so much about who are just bumping around in the dark, not understanding what life really is. Let me go to them. Jesus is worth following, not just because he's life and because he's light, but because he cared enough about you and enough about me that he would actually meet us where we are. He doesn't require us to like figure some things out and clean ourselves up before he says like, "Fine, now you're good enough for me to want to spend time with. Now you're good enough to follow me. I needed you to get some of those prerequisites out of the way, and now, okay, finally, I'll let you come after me." Jesus meets us where we're at, as broken and as dirty And as dumb as we can be, Jesus puts on skin and says, let me just meet you where you are. As someone who has grown up going to church for her whole life, this is one that I tend to overlook sometimes. And yet, what a beautiful truth this is. Jesus is worth following because he came to meet me where I am. He became flesh. One more. Let's go to verse 16. From his abundance, that's Jesus, we have all received one gracious blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses, but God's unfailing love and faithfulness came through Jesus Christ. We were all given one gracious blessing after another. Several other translations say, we've been given grace upon grace. I love that image. I think it's so beautiful. The idea that not only has Jesus offered you grace, okay? Grace is when you get something that you don't deserve. We all know what that feels like. When you've gotten something good that you was not owed to you, you didn't deserve it. My mom just did this again for me yesterday. She's always doing things like this, right? Like taking care of needs for me, giving me things that I don't deserve, helping me to make things right in my life. She offers me grace all the time. And Jesus came to offer grace. And then when we screwed it all up again, he offers us grace on top of that. And then when it goes bad again, he offers us grace on top of that. It's like a pile of grace that we just can't get out from underneath of. Every time we think like this time, it must have been the last time I've exhausted it. There's no way that he could give me grace again. Jesus says, oh no, this is what I do. Let me give you grace on top of what I've already given you. This is my job. This is who I am. This is what oozes out of me. I'm a grace giver. Let me do my thing. That's something actually that my mom says to me a lot. My mom, I told you about the giant elephant. She just loves to give things to people. She loves it. And sometimes, you know, like I'm an adult and I have a job and can pay my bills most of the time. And so like when she comes to visit, she wants to take me grocery shopping and buy my groceries. And it's like, Mom, I can buy my own groceries, you know? Like, I'm a grown-up, I think, you know? And it's hard for me to say, like, yes, go ahead, please, buy my groceries. Or she wants to, like, pay this bill for me this month. And I'm like, Mom, it's like, I can do it. And she just said this again to me yesterday. Sarah, let me do this for you. This is who I am. This is what I love to do. I just want to give. And I thought, what an awesome picture of the way that Jesus gives grace. He just can't help himself. Like, my mom cannot help but give things to people. She can't. It's just who she is, and it oozes out of her. Jesus can't help but give us grace upon grace upon grace. And so this is why he's so worthy to follow. This is why, when we think about why should I want to learn how to live life from this man? Because he's life, because he's light, because he made himself a person and met us where we were, and because he offers grace upon grace. And on top of that, he invites us to follow. So just a few more verses that I want us to look at, and then we're going to wrap everything up. You can turn the page. John, the gospel writer, he sets this whole thing up. It's like he knew that we were going to ask the question, who is this Jesus guy and why should I care? And so he took those first 17 verses to set it up for us. This is who he is. This is why you should want to listen to him. And then starting in verse 19, he begins to tell us, now these are some of the things that Jesus did, and this is how John's going to spend the rest of his gospel. We're going to go to verse 35, and we're going to look at this, this exchange that happens between Jesus and a couple of guys who start to follow him. So in verse 35, it says, the following day, John, okay, this is John the Baptist. So this is where things start to get confusing because now we've got two Johns and whatever. Okay, so we've got John the Baptist. The following day, John the Baptist was again standing with two of his disciples. As Jesus walked by, John the Baptist looked at him and declared, look, there is the Lamb of God. When John the Baptist's two disciples heard this, they followed Jesus. Jesus looked around and saw them following him. What do you want? He asked them. They replied, Rabbi, which means teacher, where are you staying? Come and see, he said. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon when they went with him to the place where he was staying, and they remained with him there for the rest of the day. Now, this may seem like a pretty innocuous story. Like, okay, I don't know, he just saw these two strangers following him, and he wanted to know what they were doing, and then he invited them along. Like, that seems like not that big of a deal. But as you keep following the story, you see that this is what Jesus does with people over and over again. That these people are looking for the truth. And as we keep reading, you actually find out that one of these disciples is Andrew, who becomes one of Jesus' 12 disciples. And it's vastly agreed upon that the other one of these guys is John. John, our guy, the gospel writer. John and Andrew, they see Jesus pass them. And there's something about him that they want to know more about. They know a little bit about him, okay? John the Baptist has taken time to explain to them that this guy is going to be a really big deal. He's going to matter. He's going to be important. And so they begin to follow him. And when Jesus sees that they're coming after him, he doesn't say like, look, I already got some people. I like got these like other 10 guys locked down already. And I don't really have room in my posse for two more. You guys like already have a teacher that you're following and I don't really need you. If you could maybe find something else to do. They say, Jesus, where are you staying? And he simply says, and like I imagine him saying this with kind of like, I was going to say a twinkle in his eye, but that sounds like Santa Claus. I imagine him like kind of like, you know, when your parents or like a teacher or something, they respond to you and you can tell like they know something that you don't know and they're like inviting you along like, oh, really? Let me tell you a little bit more about that. I just imagine that Jesus, as he says, come and see, that it's almost like mischievous, you know? Like he's saying like, come along. Now, this is going to be a crazy ride, but come and see. It is beautiful to me that in this moment, Jesus doesn't turn around to give some sort of like theological dissertation about who he is and why he's here and this is what it means for me to be the Messiah and let me explain the Old Testament and how I fulfilled all of these things and are you sure you really want to come after me right in this moment? He simply says, you want to know more about me? Come and see. Let me invite you along on the journey. And so that's what I want to do for us this morning. Some of you have been walking with Jesus for a long time. Some of you maybe don't know that you're even really interested in walking with Jesus at all. But for the next 3 weeks, I just want to invite you to come and see. Will you come and see that Jesus is life? Will you come and see that Jesus is light? Will you come and see that he offers grace upon grace? Because as we look at stories for the next 3 weeks, I'm telling you what, you are going to be blown away with the way that Jesus interacts with these people who are total disasters. This is why I love John's gospel, because he tells us stories like this, stories of these people who are such idiots that Jesus loves anyways. Stories of people who are failures and who are doubters and who are whiners. And Jesus loves them and offers them grace upon grace. Will you come and see that he's worthy to follow? If you've never made the decision that you want to follow him at all, you can do that today. It's not a complicated thing. John conveys that to us also. If this is enough for you to say, look, I just exist. I don't live life that's truly life. I don't even know what that means. It doesn't mean that every day following Jesus is like a party, you know, that I like jump out of bed every morning. Like, I can't wait to tackle the day today. Usually I'm like rolling out of bed wishing I had another hour to sleep. And yet even in the midst of difficulty, there's hope because Jesus has provided that to me. And so if you live a life right now that feels pretty devoid of hope and pretty devoid of grace, and empty of any sort of real life, Jesus wants to offer that to you today. And it's as simple as saying, Jesus, I can't be in control of my life and I need for you to be. That's it. You will never be good enough to earn your way to God. That's why Jesus came, to bridge the gap between us and him. He's not demanding that we make our way to him. He came to us. He came to offer light and life and grace upon grace. Won't you come and see how good he is? If that's a decision that you want to make today, let's talk. Don't leave without knowing that you can have hope and that you can have real life. And for those of you who are already following, I speak from my own experience when I say I lose sight sometimes of what it really means to walk with him. I lose sight of what it means to really embrace real life and to let Jesus give me grace upon grace, because I beat myself up for the way that I fail. And so today, would you just let all of that go and come and see that the Jesus who saved you is the same Jesus who loves you. He hasn't changed. He doesn't demand something of you that he didn't before. He's the same. Won't you come and see? Father, I thank you. I thank you that you loved us enough to let your son come to us, that you offered us, in the image of Jesus, that you offered us life, you offered us light, you offer us grace upon grace. And Jesus, thank you that as you walked the earth, you invited people to simply come and see. You didn't need to defend yourself, because you knew that simply coming after you would let people see what you were all about. Jesus, thank you that you're a grace giver. Thank you that you offer us grace upon grace. And I pray now that anyone in here, Jesus, who hasn't yet surrendered themselves to you, who hasn't yet said, I can't keep trying to be in control. I need to give this over to God. I pray that your spirit would work in their heart, would work in their lives, would make them uncomfortable in their seat. Help them to realize that this is why they're here today, to come and see. And for those of us who have already done that, I pray for a new sense and a new understanding and a new reminder of what it means to simply let go and to come and follow you, to come and see who you really are, to stop trying to earn our way to you, but to remember that the same Jesus who saved us is the Jesus who is making us more and more like him. Help us to let go of ourselves and to fully follow you. In Jesus' name.